You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com. Been writing there for over a year now and been your lovely host of the Locked On Pacers podcast for the entire 2017-2018 season. On today's show, I was joined by Warriors beat writer from the Mercury News, Mark Medina. He and I discussed all things Warriors. We talked about the injuries to the Big Four. We talked about the Quinn Cook addition and what he means and what he adds to the Warriors of the Pacers twice in the next 8 days. And we also discussed Steph Curry's injury and what that means long term. We also had a little bit of a discussion about who will fill the void, since Klay Thompson is not expected to play tonight. Who will fill the void at his on his defensive side? Who will guard Victor Oladipo and things like that? Without further ado, Mark Medina from the Mercury News. Joining me now is Mark Medina, Warriors writer for the Mercury News, and I believe the man who outscooped Woj on the MCL Curry MCL sprain. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Thanks for having me. What did I do exactly?
I don't know if you actually did, but it seemed like you had the Curry MCL sprain first, the first one to tweet it out at least.
I would love to get that credit, but I think Woj broke it as always.
All right. I was doing timestamps and I saw you had one, I think it was March 23rd at like 11:57, and Woj had on the 24th, but
you know what? I can say that I confirmed it within seconds, but no, Woj got it.
It's all right. So let's actually start there. The Pacers play the Warriors twice in the next 8 days. The Warriors have a litany of injuries. Curry is obviously out to the playoffs. We can talk about him later. Draymond missed Sunday's game with the flu. Is he expected to be back on Tuesday?
That remains to be seen. Steve Kerr, the Warriors coach, was saying that he's expecting Draymond Green either to be back Tuesday against Indiana or Thursday against Milwaukee. And actually, that's the same timeline for Kevin Durant. He's been out with a rib injury. So the expectation is they'll have one or two of their all-stars at some point by the end of the week. And then Klay Thompson, who's been nursing a fractured right thumb, probably sometime next week.
Okay. So then if you look at the starting five for Tuesday's game, I think sadly Pacer fans are going to not be happy that we'll see most of the big four of the Warriors in 2 weeks or a week from now. What is your starting five expected to be? If Kevin Durant and Green are there, is it Quinn Cook at point guard again, probably?
Yeah, so I think the perfect, point of reference is looking at the Warriors game against Utah. And the starting lineup was not pretty, but it was Quinn Cook, Nick Young, Patrick McCall, Kevon Looney, and JaVale McGee. Draymond Green comes back. He's going to take that power forward slot, so Kevon Looney's off. Kevin Durant comes back. He'll take that small forward spot, so Patrick McCall's out. So you could potentially see Kevin Durant, Draymond Green back. You would see them in the starting lineup with Quinn Cook, Nick Young, and JaVale McGee. Real interesting combinations, to say the least.
Is there any chance that in a week from now that the Warriors, because they're basically locked into the two spot right now, I think they're 5.5 games back of the Rockets, they're 5 or 6 games up on the third seed, that they start resting or kind of, because I know Durant's got the rib things, maybe they keep him out, keep Draymond out. Is there any chance of that Pacers could get a break maybe?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And it's something that Steve Kerr has floated as a possibility. But I think specifically with the injured All-Stars, you know, not counting for Steph Curry, because he's going to be out for the rest of the regular season in the first round of the playoffs. But there is kind of that fine line of, Steve wants to get those guys to get into some kind of rhythm before the playoffs start. So it's not like he's just putting them out there as soon as the playoffs start. But I think where you might see some of that resting go into play is if any combination of Draymond, Kevin, and Klay maybe need an extra game just to heal some last few things in their respective injuries, maybe that happens. And then I think what you're also going to see is some of the veteran players like Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, David West, even though the Warriors are really lacking for bodies right now, I think they're going to make sure that those minutes are still limited. And what's also interesting is you look again at Sunday's game against Utah, there's no four All-Stars in the lineup But Steve Kerr made a point not to start any of those guys, even though they have the most experience and they're well suited holding down the fort. And the reason was twofold. One, he wanted to limit those guys' minutes so they do stay fresh for the playoffs, but also he wanted to keep them in their respective roles that they normally have when they have the All-Stars on the team. So as far as your original question with the resting, I think that's going to apply more to Iguodala, West, and Livingston than anything else. But I think there's still some value that Steve Kerr's going to attach to make sure that those three injured All-Stars get some good minutes so they can establish some kind of momentum heading into the postseason.
All right. So then you hit Quinn Cook a little bit. He started the last seven games that Curry didn't play. So he started, I think, six. Then Curry came back. Obviously, I heard again. He started the Utah game that you're talking about. I read your article. You had a really, I think everybody should check that out, is on the Quinn Cook Curry relationship. I really like that. That was a really good reporting by you. Is Cook sort of is starting because he's a kind of a similar model to Curry versus Livingston, who's more of a inside player, kind of post up kind of guard, versus Cook, who plays more of the Curry style per se? Is that why he's starting?
No, and it's not even just because you can't really compare anyone to Steph Curry. I think it has more to do with two things. One, it goes back to Steve Kerr not wanting to play Sean Livingston starting minutes to preserve him, also to keep the rotations intact. But also it does speak to the trust level that they've seen in Quinn Cook, that he's a guy that if you give him minutes, he'll continue to develop more and more. And obviously, like any young NBA player, particularly someone who has been in the G League for the last few years, there's certainly things he can get better at defensively, his shooting consistency, his aggressiveness, but they like his professionalism. They like his work ethic. They love the fact that he knows, for the most part, how to get guys involved while also being aggressive and not falling into that temptation that any young player might have when they suddenly have a lot of minutes that all of a sudden they feel like they have to put on a resume reel and jack up a lot of shots and that sort of thing. He really plays solid, and I think that basically illustrates why he's been able to get this kind of run that he's gotten the last week.
So then do you expect Cook, this is just a more general question too, be the starter the first round of the playoffs, assuming Curry misses? I know Curry has said he wants to play, but odds are he probably won't because, you know, MCL sprain is more than a three-week injury usually.
Yeah, and I mean, Steve Kerr has already ruled Steph Curry out for the playoffs. Steph Curry said that he's trying to prove coach wrong, but the way I've seen this dynamic play out with the coaching staff and the training staff, they overrule Steph, so it doesn't really matter what he wants because they want to look out for him. I think it's basically a lock that Quinn Cook's going to be on the playoff roster. Now, technically, the Warriors don't have to make a decision. They won't make a decision until April 10th. But the question is now going to be, who are they going to cut? Because they have a 15-man roster. He is a player that's signed on a two-way deal, but because of the terms of that deal, he's only allowed to play for the regular season. So, you know, I know Omri Caspi's not really liked this kind of conversation, but it just seems inevitable that he is a strong likelihood to be the casualty. But I don't know if that's guaranteed, simply because the Warriors are mindful that so many things could change from now till then in terms of other guys getting hurt, or maybe something happens to Quinn Cook, knock on wood. So you just never know. But I think, you know, barring any health situation, it seems inevitable Quinn Cook's going to be on the playoff roster. Now it's a matter of, who do they cut? Is it Omri Caspi or Damian Jones or someone else? Who knows? But I think it just seems only logic has it that they would have Quinn Cook, even if Steph Curry comes back and is healthy, if nothing else, for insurance purposes.
So for Tuesday's game, Klay Thompson's not going to play, right? He get reevaluated on Saturday, and then what else is going on with that?
So he got reevaluated on Thursday. He's not playing this week. He has been practicing, but it's been very limited. He's been doing a lot of upper body strength in the weight room. He's been shooting. It's been looking great, but there's one point of distinction. He's been shooting with his left hand, and as well as he is a shooter with his left hand from three, from mid-range, and probably even better than a lot of players in the NBA with their dominant hand, I don't think the Warriors want him to play with just his left hand. So he still has a bandage on his thumb, and they're allowing that to heal a little bit. So he hasn't really done any non-contact work at all, and neither has Draymond Green or Kevin Durant. So I think that's going to be kind of the focal point this week to see how much contact work they can do before getting those guys back on the court. But that could happen. That could happen as soon as today, and then them returning on Tuesday against Indiana.
So then that kind of leads to my next question. If Thompson's obviously not going to play, who is that fills the void of his wing defense? Because the Pacers' best player is Victor Oladipo. He's going to be guarded by somebody. I know Nick Young started against the Jazz, but I don't think Nick Young is some superb defender, at least from his Laker days.
Yeah, you're being very diplomatic with that now. He's not a good defender at all, right?
Well, you are the former Laker writer, so you know.
Yeah. Now, to Nick's credit, I have seen him in both teams take a charge. It's very funny to say this, but I'm being completely serious. There was a game this season where he was defending Russell Westbrook, and he actually shut him down a lot of times in the game. But to expect that to happen on a consistent basis, that's a stretch. I think that if you're going to kind of microanalyze his defense, he's actually not a bad on-ball defender, but he gets lost on defense. He gets lost on offense. I mean, even now, there's times where Steve Kerr or his teammates are yelling at him to cut at a certain place on the court. But the Warriors know those weaknesses, but they also know that he is capable of getting his three-point shot up. So they're starting him for those purposes of having a threat out there that can shoot the ball and help with the floor spacing. But as far as who takes on these defensive assignments, I think it's going to be Andre Iguodala, but he'll come off the bench. So they're going to see a lot of cross-matching and then help defense to start out.
And I imagine if Durant is back, he could see some minutes just trying to shut
down.
Because he's
I could see that as well. I could see that as well. Kevin Durant has a really good wingspan. He can defend multiple positions. And, you know, Kevin Durant's defense, relatively speaking, has dropped off since his superb start earlier this season. So, yeah, maybe this is a chance to ratchet up and get some get his name out there in that defensive all-team or even defensive player of the year conversation going again.
So then another lineup thing to look at is, so the Pacers obviously start Miles Turner, who's kind of a stretch five, I would say. You know, there's some debate in Pacer Twitter about that, but is there anything the Warriors might do to, so could they, like, would they start Draymond as center? Is there anything like that, or they're still going to see the McGee start center or Zaza, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think because of what you just said, it's likely that JaVale McGee would start because Zaza is that plotting setter. I think what you would see is a combination. JaVale McGee doing some defense there. Draymond Green, Jordan Bell defending at the five. I think that the one of the strengths the Warriors have is they have so much versatility in their front court that when it comes to matching up with teams big or small, they have that flexibility to do that. And that basically explains, beyond the fact that you have to take what JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia can offer, both good and bad, but it also explains why Steve Kerr changes his rotation so much outside of his four all-stars that he wants to have that flexibility to chase matchups.
So is McGee not a terrible in-space defender then? Is he not, like, he can at least come out and kind of try to guard Turner at the three-point line?
Yeah, he's really athletic and he has good wingspan, but it has been an adjustment of him extending his range out on the perimeter. It's something he's gotten better at, but he's more known to be able to, as far as those matchups of playing at the five. I mean, he's a lot more nimble than Zaza, but I think his main strength that the Warriors like isn't so much that, but his ability to get up and down the floor fast. And that really seemed to excite the Warriors starting lineup, and it kind of plays into their style of play where they like to get fancy a little bit and throw lobs and that sort of thing.
So then, with all these players out, has there been some differences in the Warriors' play style? So, like, I've just looked at their couple of losses. So they lost to the Spurs and Utah. Their three-point shots were, like, way down, at least attempts-wise. Like, I think they're a 30. Team attempts 33s a game. I think they were at 15 and, like, 19 in those games. Is the pace slower with these guys, or are they still trying to run the same offense they ran with Curry, Durant, just with not as good of players?
No, there's no question the pace is slower. The three-point numbers are down. The shooting's down. The floor spacing has shrunk significantly. Obviously, the Warriors are going to benefit soon with Draymond and Kevin Durant coming back because they're obvious talent. But also, there's kind of a stronger body of work of what that has allowed the Warriors to do. When Steph Curry was out for 11 games when he first sprained his ankle earlier this season, what you saw is the Warriors really ratchet up defensively in terms of their effort level and the rotations and yeah, basically all the above on defense. But also you saw Kevin Durant increase his usage rate. He had a nice blend of games where he was shooting high volume, and sometimes it was him going ISO heavy and him taking over. But then you also saw a fair amount of games of he's clearly the leading scorer, the leading shot maker. He's handling the ball a lot, but he made it a point to get his guys involved. And I think that's going to be the intriguing thing to close out the season once Kevin Durant comes back. Can he keep that balance for the most part? Because I think there's going to be instances, though, the Warriors are going to lean on him heavily, but they don't want it to become a version of Kobe Bryant, right? They want to have team balance. And I think obviously where Draymond comes into play is he's another scoring threat, but he is also that emotional leader that gets guys going defensively. He's such a smart basketball player. So with all these new combinations and guys that are young, he's able to, I think, really show his leadership and making guys feel comfortable and tell them where to go. And I think when this was last week when they were in Phoenix, he was the lone healthy all-star. And you really saw that he was picking up that responsibility even more, just knowing how much more was required of him to do that.
So then do you expect this game to be played in the, let's say, high 90s, low 100s, which would probably actually favor the Pacers in some sense?
I think so. I think, again, when you saw the Warriors without Steph, they embraced kind of being this team that was willing to grind it out. And it's interesting because the Warriors aren't really known to play that kind of style. They're known as that fun team that throws a lot, shoots up a lot of three-pointers and makes fancy passes and plays at a fast pace. Now, the thing that the Warriors, I don't think, get enough credit for is even with all the success they've had the last few years, defensively, they've been really, really good. It's not just because they have really good defenders with Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, but they play very intense. They play very disciplined. They have a lot of smart players. But I think this season, that intensity level dropped. I think because of the overall complacency with being a team that's defending the NBA championship, they know they have a lot of talent. They know that every team's giving them their best shot every single game. And that, frankly, requires a lot of energy to kind of combat that every game. But I think when Steph was out, the Warriors were very cognizant that their margin of error is a lot slimmer. And so as a result of that, you're seeing them embrace kind of that workman-like mentality. So I think you will see some ugly basketball because of the fact that there's just not as much talent, there's not as much floor spacing, but they're also kind of taking a new identity.
Yeah, I have to say, for a Pacers team that is in a dogfight for that 3-6 spot, it honestly could not draw the Warriors at a better time. I mean, they're lucky to get this team kind of maybe at its, honestly, its worst right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's going to be interesting is how do the Warriors measure all this? For all these new guys that are getting minutes, this is the best opportunity they can get because this is their time to shine and show what they can do short-term, long-term. But from a coaching standpoint, I think, you know, back to your resting question, Steve Kerr is going to be juggling at what cost is it even important to win these games and just measure development because, frankly, they're locked in at the number two spot. I don't see Houston suddenly having this collapse unexpectedly when they've been so dominant so far this season. And technically, they have such a cushion over Portland that they could basically lose every single game and it doesn't matter. So at this point, I wouldn't say the results don't matter, the play doesn't matter, because the Warriors want to feel good heading into the postseason about their play, especially with the fact that they're not going to have Steph. But I don't think that you're going to be seeing Steve exhaust all his resources and have his guys log heavy minutes just to squeeze out a win. So, you know, it's very well possible that the Warriors could end this these last stretch of games on a losing streak.
Do the Warriors have, in the locker room, have any concern about the Rockets? Are they still not really focusing on them? Are there any, like, worry the Rockets with home court could beat them in the West Finals?
I think it's a mix. They have a lot of respect for the Rockets. They know they have a lot of talent. I think that they appreciate and respect the fact that Houston was so aggressive, because the reason why they were so aggressive this offseason is because they're so good, the Warriors. So they kind of see it as this another reminder of their dominance. They use it as motivation as well. They see, hey, this is a team that's trying to knock us off. I think they do take exception to what Clint Capela was saying afterwards to reporters. I think to ESPN's Tim McMahon, that after the Rockets beat the Warriors twice in the regular season, this showed that, hey, the Rockets can beat them. They have a lot of confidence. I think Kevin Durant took exception because it wasn't a star player saying this. It's Clint Capela, and he couldn't help but take a shot and say, hey, it's easy for you to say this. You don't necessarily have to back it up game to game. But I think the Warriors, they have confidence that they could still beat them in a seven-game series, and I think that explains why they weren't really trying to chase home court advantage. But I think at the same time, they weren't trying to chase home court advantage because it was out of respect for Houston. They knew it would take a lot of effort, and they realized, hey, they're better off trying to stay healthy because that's going to be their best shot. And with what just happened this past week with Steph Curry, the Warriors are still optimistic they can hold down the fort. They still have three All-Stars. Last year, they were without Kevin Durant to open the playoffs, and for a good chunk of the season, it really didn't matter. They still got by. But I think the Warriors are very well aware that they are vulnerable. But I think in a very weird way, as much as they're going to miss Steph Curry, I think Steph Curry wasn't just blowing smoke when he said that this could ignite a spark in them. This could spark some juice because now they have something even more to play for, in the sense that, of course, they want to win an NBA championship. But, you know, maybe they felt at times during the season they could get by because of how talented they are. But this is something that they know, hey, this isn't just going to be as simple as rolling out the ball. They're going to have to work for this, and they're going to have to overcome some challenges to do it.
Yeah, well, since I have you on, I have to ask you about Curry. I can't not ask a Warriors writer about Curry. What is going on in that situation? Curry said he wanted to play and wants to play in 3 weeks. Kerr says he's not going to play at least the first round. Is there a concern that he could miss two rounds? I mean, just what is going on with the whole situation?
Yeah, I think what you're hearing with those comments is the Warriors are going to protect Steph Curry from himself. Of course he wants to come back and play as soon as he can. He wanted to come back from his ankle injury that he first sprained earlier this season on Christmas. He wanted to come back for Christmas Day, but it wasn't quite 100%. And the Warriors said, hey, sorry, I know you want to play on Christmas Day. It's a national TV game. It's a holiday. It's against Cleveland and LeBron, but they care more about Steph Curry's health long term. And so right now the Warriors are going to reevaluate him in 3 weeks, but that's when the playoffs start. So they know that, hey, Steph's going to need some time to practice. They want to obviously see how he progresses with his rehab. So I think when you look at the general scope of how long it takes players to come back from grade two MCL sprains, it's usually 4 to 6 weeks. There's the expectation internally from both Steph Curry's camp and the Warriors camp that, yeah, he'll come back in the second round. He's not going to miss anything beyond that. But I think Steph is still clinging to the outside hope. Maybe he can squeeze in some first round games. If Steph Curry's 100%, the Warriors aren't going to say, hey, you can't play in the first round. But I think the Warriors are anticipating that he's going to need more time.
Is there a point, though, if he's, let's say, 85, 90, they just decide to play him because of the Durant signing, which I almost see as an insurance policy when they signed him, as kind of like, it's what happened in 2016 with Curry getting hurt. It probably cost him the championship that year. So I think signing Durant was like an insurance that in case Curry wasn't 100%, we have a number two superstar in the wings. Is there any chance you could see him playing even if he's at 85% like he was in 2016?
That's really interesting. And frankly, I don't know the answer to that simply because when you're talking about these percentages, I don't know what the medical staff's calculus is with that. And you also go under the assumption that no one in the NBA, no athlete is ever technically 100%, right? But under, I think, the general idea of is Steph manageable to play, but could he still benefit from sitting out a few games here or there? If I had to guess, I think the Warriors are going to exercise on the side of caution because the Warriors have three other All-Stars. I think in the first round, you know, because of how competitive the West is, sure, I'm sure there'll be some challenges, but I don't think a series outcome is going to be in jeopardy. Now, I think the interesting question is, in the hypothetical, and I don't think this is going to happen, but just for the sake of playing that what-if game, say the Warriors for some reason are trailing 2-1 or, heaven forbid, like 3-2 in the first round, do they put Steph back? That's going to be the interesting question because on one hand, you want to salvage the season, but the other hand, as healthy as or as as good as Steph Curry is, that opens up two potential problems. One, a chemistry standpoint of, hey, this might sound absurd when I'm saying this, because Steph Curry is really good and he knows how to play, but just that integration process, like how rusty is he going to be? But I think most importantly is, are you compromising his long-term health? I think that's where the fork in the road is going to be. But even though this injury is cause for concern, I don't think the Warriors are going to be vulnerable in the first round. I think they're, I'm not going to say they're going to sweep whoever they play, but I don't think there's going to be this point of contention of, oh, wow, their playoff hopes are, or their aspirations to advance are in jeopardy. I think because of the Warriors' talent with three other all-stars who are going to be healthy because these injuries are pretty minor, and their, you know, experience and Steve Kerr's coaching and the fact they have some pretty good role players, I think that's not really even going to be an issue.
Yeah, I was more thinking if it lingered into the second round. I think you're right with that first round. They should be able to take care of whoever they play, because in the last time he was hurt two playoffs ago, they had that series against Portland where I believe they lost the third game and it was like 2-1, and then they kind of brought him back where they said he was 100%, and he was for a little bit, but then he was probably more prone to re-injury and sort of lingered the rest of the playoffs. So that was my concern, is could they bring him back too early for that
game? Yeah, interesting. It's an interesting question, because when Steph Curry was asked about that yesterday, did he come back too soon, 2 years ago, he smiled and said it doesn't matter. But then he said at the same time, this is giving me a good barometer of where my progress should be. And what's interesting with that, the severity of that injury was less. That was a grade one sprain. This is a grade two sprain. But I think to the timeline standpoint, this is not as bad as a grade three sprain could be, which could have potentially sidelined him for deep into the playoffs, if not all of it. And so I think when you're talking to the Warriors, talking to people in Steph's camp, talking to Steph in general, as much as he's frustrated that he's sitting out there, very well aware that the timeline could have been a lot worse. But I think because of the initial projections right now, there is the expectation he'll be all right for some point in the second round. But I mean, you're bringing up some interesting questions and fair questions. It's, the reality is this is an unknown. That's why they're reevaluating him in 3 weeks, because they just frankly have to wait and see how he progresses.
Yeah. I just hope for basketball's sake, for a good NBA playoffs, that Curry comes back, because really when he's not healthy, it just didn't look right 2 years ago, when that team clearly should have won the title.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, at the same time, as much as you wonder to what degree he played a factor, the Warriors had two other All-Stars at the time. They're up 3-1 in the finals. I mean, to salvage or to squander that kind of opportunity, I know LeBron played out of his mind and Kyrie Irving's really good and the Cavaliers are a good team, but I hate to think, hey, they only lost because of Steph Curry. I mean, they had that almost given to them. They just need to squeeze out another win. And for them to lose three in a row like that, even if Steph wasn't at his fullest, it's frankly inexcusable.
Yeah, and I also just don't like when star players are hurt in the playoffs, because it just,
yeah, for sure,
it's just not as fun. I mean, I just remember the year even when Kyrie got hurt the 3 years ago, and when Durant was out a couple, I think it was two playoffs ago. I mean, it just not fun when the star players aren't out there, because it just makes it, you know, that's the whole point of the NBA playoffs is, or NBA season, is getting to the playoffs healthy. And when guys don't, it's just really disappointing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like when I'm covering the Warriors, as you know, it's not like we're covering it wearing a Warriors jersey. Like we all root for the story and we all root for early games so we can make deadline on time. But from that aspect, that's the other third thing that we root for. We don't want guys to get hurt. Just, I mean, on a human level, that's tough to deal with. But you also want to have, you know, all teams kind of have as fair of a fight as possible.
Plus, I'm sure there's a party that wants to cover an NBA Finals, right? Have you ever covered an NBA Finals?
Yeah, I covered I started covering the Lakers, writing their Lakers blog for the LA Times in the middle of their 2009-10 season.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, you don't have a rooting interest. You root for moments. So, you know, when you're covering NBA Finals, it's basically you're covering a moment. You're covering history. And that cuts both ways. You know, when I was covering the Lakers, the always day we need to beat writer, and so rebuilding years. Hey, you are covering moments. It's bad basketball, but you're covering a franchise that's in disarray. You know, you're covering the lottery. Are they going to keep this pick or not? You know, this is a pick that could – determine their future. You're covering Kobe Bryant's farewell tour. This is his final game. At every single stop of his final season, you're covering his last game. He has that 60-point barrage that was incredible to watch and cover. So those are like, it all falls under the purview of you're witnessing history and you're covering moments.
Yeah, all right. That's all I've got. You have anything else you want to add about the Warriors that I haven't hit on?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. I mean, I'll do some selfish plugs if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Plug whatever you want. I do want to say your story on Quinn Cook and Curry was really good. I read that, I think, on Saturday or Sunday, whenever you posted it.
Okay, well I'll take that credit, but I didn't want to clarify. It was actually my colleague, Melissa Rowland, that wrote that. But I'd like to say that I do write other good stories. So whatever, I'll take credit for anything else. But yeah, I'll do some shameless plugging, self-promotion. For any Warriors fans out there, you know, we got a lot of coverage at the Mercury News. We're under a paywall, but I'd like to think that we give a lot of good Warriors coverage that's worth it. It's basically the price of a cup of coffee. So you just take one less of those a week and you'll be able to cover your bases. We got a lot of good enterprise features, analysis, game coverage, news, day-to-day, all that good stuff. And then I have a podcast, the Plant Dubs podcast, that you can subscribe to on iTunes. Also have Twitter like everyone else. You can follow me on Mark_Medina. And then I just recently partnered with this company called Purple that has a private text messaging service that I can give Warriors updates on everything in regards to stories, updates from practices, updates from games all down the line. And instead of having to go on Twitter and constantly refresh your timeline, these updates literally go into your phone and they're texted to you. So you don't have to worry about, you know, opening up Twitter and all that. It'll just go to a text message in your phone right off the bat. So you can subscribe to that. That's $5 a month. And that social text messaging service is just new, so it's all fluid. I'm really open to any ideas on how to do it, but I'm trying to make it as interactive as possible and making it well worth your money. So there's a lot of different ways to follow my Warriors coverage.
I recommend doing all of that if you guys can. As always, Mark, thanks for joining me on today's Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow our podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Leave us 5-star reviews. Hopefully it's 5-star reviews. You can follow me on Twitter at FreemanAdam5. As always, tweet at our podcast with comments, concerns, whatever's going on. If you enjoyed today's show, you can follow Mark at Mark_Medina. As always, Pacer fans, have a great rest of your day.